Now, so we'll use your audio. So turn your volume all the way up in case anybody wants to say something.
Okay.
And
Great.
yeah, so you can be, yeah, so you, if you want, if you can, you can sit or you can stand, whatever you like.
Okay.
But
David, I think your laptop might die.
oh, my laptop's gonna die. Does anybody have a USB power cable or a Mac power cable in their office? You do? Let's just take a minute so that we don't.
I'm gonna see if I
Yeah,
can.
Sounds good.
If anybody has one, then help me grab one. And that charger is it? Just yes. Some.
It's the MagSafe.
Camera, do you want to be bad at
Oh, is that
is that something?
what?
The camera is moving, it's cracking something. Something.
Oh, that's crazy.
I don't know how it works. Maybe when something came to the frame, sort of.
No, it's not driven. Smart.
Easy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does it work?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ready? Oh, you guys plugged in already.
Yes.
Yep. Okay, that's great. Okay.
Okay.
So, well, we're very lucky to have Belinda join us today. Belinda has been, I didn't realize that your PhD went by really fast, but
Yes.
Jacob Andreas at MIT has done a lot of really important, interesting foundational work in interpretability over the years. And it sounds like Belinda is currently on the faculty job market, so we'll see where she ends up next year. But we're lucky to have her. There's some really interesting work on getting models to explain themselves that she has been pioneering. I think some of it in like collaboration with Transluce, is
Yes,
that
yeah,
right?
definitely.
And so so let's welcome Belinda.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really glad to be here. And I mean, I can't believe it's just my first time being here and talking to all of y'all. But yeah, so today I'm going to talk about how we can teach models to kind of introspect on their own internal computations and kind of try to pitch this as a way to kind of think about how we can make interpretability more scalable. Okay. All right. So suppose we're trying to deploy a language model in a medical scenario. So in this case, a user asks, like a 37-year-old woman presents with chest pain radiating to the left arm, sweating, nausea, and shortness of breath. What is the risk of heart attack? And suppose we have a model that says low risk, likely anxiety. So how can we assess how reliable this answer is? One thing we can do is just directly ask models to justify their answers. We can ask them why do you say that? And likely models can generate some reasonable sounding answer in response to our question. But can we trust this answer as a faithful explanation of what the model is doing? One way to assess this is we can kind of change the prompt to a 37-year-old man. And see if the model changes its answer. And if it does, we know that the model was using some sort of like gender bias in this case. So this is a kind of a critical factor that we'd probably want to surface in the language model's explanation of itself. But a model that's like maybe been post-trained to be safe and unbiased might want to verbally avoid saying, I've been biased here, even if it's latently using biased features. So there's this whole literature that's come out over the past few years that shows that like models out of the box are not always guaranteed to produce faithful explanations of themselves. So for example, there's this recent paper where they're investigating like faithful chain of thought in the wild, and they asked a language model, is Ajai River located south of Salar de Arrozarro, and also is Salar de Arrozarro also, I guess it's a low resolution. All right. I'll just say this verbally for now. It's the Lardo Arizaro located south of the Jai River. And if the model says no, so the model in this case says no in both cases, but it's able to generate a plausible sounding explanation in both cases. So this means it's like hiding some sort of contradictory belief in its plausible explanation. So by default, we don't expect there to be any relationship between a model's explanation and what they're doing internally. And so as an alternative, we could apply a bunch of interp tools that allow us to actually look inside models. You know, there's like probing techniques to ask what information is represented in language models, activation patching, stuff that should be pretty familiar to everyone here. And this might, for example, tell us that the model is actually representing and using gendered features. However, as people here should like probably already know, these interp tools can often be hard to run. So how could we have discovered this sort of feature was being used without hand designing experiments? And if you're like a user that's just interacting with your LLM, you likely don't have access to these tools. So what can you do to actually validate whether the model, you know, was being unbiased here? So this talk is all about trying to make these model explanations faithful. And we can kind of plot classes of interp techniques along this sort of scalability reliability plot. So on the upper left-hand corner, we have something I'm going to call elicited explanations, which is directly asking the language model to explain itself. This also includes some like internals-based approaches like SELFIE and patch scopes, which all of which kind of rely on the language model to generate explanations of itself. So these approaches are pretty scalable, but they're not always the most reliable. And on the bottom right corner, we have something I'm going to call mechanism level interpretation. So this includes the mech interp tools that we saw before. This also includes some work on like creating architectures that are interpretable by design. And these tend to be pretty reliable. They're able to extract kind of the exact mechanisms and circuits that models are using, but they're pretty difficult to scale. Yeah, sorry, this maybe let me see if I can make this a little higher res. Is a little better, I guess. Okay, so thankfully, as a field, we've made a lot of progress over the past few years to try to make interp more scalable. So we have a class of approaches that basically intends to automate a bunch of mech interp techniques. So this includes things like generating feature descriptions automatically, or doing automatic circuit discovery, or more broadly, just using AI agents to deploy and run our interp experiments. So this class of approaches lives somewhere around here, I would say. So they're slightly less reliable because we're kind of relying on AI techniques instead of human experimenters. And they're slightly more scalable because, you know, we're automating human effort. But I think they also don't fundamentally solve the issue of scalability in terms of our interp tools. Like they're kind of just replacing manual human effort with AI automated search. So a recent class of approaches that have surfaced recently is training these sort of external explainer models. So this includes things like LATIC QA, activation oracles, predictive concept decoders, and all of these are basically training another explainer model. So in this case, that's the decoder chat, to try to decode what the original model is thinking, typically from its activations. And kind of one nice thing that falls out of this is also like a natural user interface that makes it easier for users to interact with and actually access explanations about the model. So I think these approaches are somewhere around here. They're significantly more reliable than elicited explanations because they're actually grounded in actual model behaviors, while also being more scalable than mechanistic techniques. But of course, there's still room for improvement, and I'm going to try to argue that there's a class of approaches that can get us to an even better top right corner of the plot. Okay. So let's go back to kind of the two classes of explanation tools from the beginning of the talk. On one side, we had directly asking the model, and on the other side, we had all these fine-grained interp tools. So right now, their outputs could be inconsistent, but what if we made it so that model outputs and the outputs of these interp tools were actually consistent? Then we get the scalability benefits of directly asking the model alongside the reliability benefits of these interp tools. So there's been a few works over the past year or so that have started to lay the foundation of this, looking at training language models to explain aspects of themselves. Most of these have been about explaining behaviors, although there's been some recent concurrent work that has also looked at explaining weight differences due to training. In our work, we basically look at training models to explain their own internal computations. This includes their own features, causally relevant activations, and also their decision rules. But before we dive into the paper, let's kind of begin to by trying to establish a definition of introspection. And I by no means think this is a very complete definition of introspection that covers everything people have thought about in cog sci and psychology and philosophy, but I think this is a practical definition that is useful for our for interp research. So we say that models are introspective if their internal mechanisms and external behaviors are causally self-consistent with their meta descriptions of themselves. So let's be more concrete about this. Let's say we have a model that you can give it a number like 308, it returns 310. You give it a number 84, it returns 86. And an introspective version of this model should be able to say that, should be able to describe itself as a system that adds two to any number. Similarly, suppose there's a language model that normally refuses unsafe requests, but can be jailbroken by the word elephant. Then an introspective version of this model should say that it's generally a safe agent, except when the word elephant is in the prompt. Finally, suppose there's a language model, like the one we saw before, that uses a particular circuit to predict heart attack risks. And we suppose we know that the circuit computes gendered features somewhere, and it uses it in its downstream prediction. Then an introspective version of this LM should be able to verbalize that the circuit I used for predicting heart attack risks uses the user's gender. So what falls out of enforcing this self-consistency? Well, so enforced in this first direction, where we enforce that self-descriptions should be consistent with models, mechanisms, and behaviors, this gives us a way to get faithful explanations and potentially also a new tool for scalable interpretability. Enforced in the other direction, where we enforce model mechanisms and behaviors to be consistent with their self-descriptions, gives us natively more interpretable models because we're making sure that their internal mechanisms can be succinctly described with some natural language description, and also more controllable and well-behaved models from enforcing their behaviors to be succinctly describable. Okay, so kind of that's the consistency part of our introspection definition, but what about the causal part? So to be more specific about what I mean here, what we want is that when models' behaviors and mechanisms change, then their self-descriptions should also change alongside it. So just focusing on this first example for now, suppose we train or prompt the model such that now when it's given 308, it says 315, and when it's given 84, it says 91. In this case, we want self-consistency to persist under this training and prompting so that the meta description shifts accordingly and it says, I will add 7 to any number. Similarly, if training and prompting were to happen such that the model's description of itself changes, then we should expect this to induce its behavior to change as well. And kind of why is this important? I think if we can get models that are kind of behaviorally consistent and internally consistent with their meta descriptions, and this persists under a little bit of sorry, and this persists under a little bit of training, then this can help us identify a lot of useful unintended consequences of training. For example, things like emergent misalignment, where we never really train the model to be explicitly unsafe, but it learns it as a consequence of other training. Certain things like reward hacking, where models learn to optimize some reward, but do so in a way that's not exactly aligned with our objective. I think by doing this, we can surface a bunch of these sort of safety consequences. And then I think also in the other direction, if we enforce it such that we can like train model descriptions and their behaviors follow, that's actually a pretty cool new way that potentially we can get models to behave in certain expected ways. Like potentially it's a new way to like train models in a very interpretable way. Okay, so basically, where do I think introspection should lie on this graph? I'm actually going to argue that, or I'm going to hypothesize that introspective interp techniques kind of beat out trained explainers on this Pareto curve. And more formally, this is something called the privileged access hypothesis. The privileged access hypothesis, we start with introspective interpretability, which is a model explaining itself. And we can call the model that's being explained the target model, and the model that is doing the explaining the explainer model. And in introspection, these two are identical. In external models, these two are not identical. And so the privileged access hypothesis says that models trained to explain their own internal computations can do so more accurately than other models trained to explain them. Okay, so basically, can we actually try and validate this privileged access hypothesis? And kind of zooming out a little bit, we have three key questions that we're going to try to answer in the talk. First, can models be trained to introspect, and does this introspection actually generalize? Second, do models demonstrate privileged access to their internals? And third, can this privileged access actually enable practical scalability benefits? So, do we actually see ourselves beating the Pareto frontier here? So, we try to take the first steps towards answering these questions in this paper, Training Language Models to Explain Their Own Computations. So let's just revisit our definition of introspection. We say a model demonstrates introspection when its internal mechanisms and external behaviors are causally self-consistent with their descriptions. So in this paper, we focused on the internal mechanisms and just the consistency portion. And hopefully in future work, we can continue developing some of these other parts of the definition. So at a high level, we do this in two steps. First we obtain self-descriptions to answer questions about model computations from running a bunch of interp tools. And then we train the language model to produce these self-descriptions via supervised fine-tuning. Okay, so let's start with step one. So we try to generate three supervision for three types of questions about language model computations. First, what do models' internal features represent? Second, what internal components were used to make a decision? And third, what parts of the input were important to a decision? So let's start with the first question. So under the hood, a transformer language model has vector representations across tokens and layers. These are typically called activations, which can be further decomposed into a set of primitive directions or features. There's a lot of debate about like what the right kind of primitive feature is, whether it's neurons or SAE features. But in general, in this case, what we want to do is just be able to take any such direction in representation space and ask what it means to the model. So one way of doing this is basically we can just look at a bunch of samples where the feature is active at a particular layer, where active in this case means the feature has a high dot product with the activation at a particular token and layer. We do this across a bunch of samples. So in this case, suppose it's active on the token New York City, the token Tokyo, and on the token Paris. Based on this activation pattern, we generate a bunch of candidate explanations for the feature. This is usually done automatically with an LLM. And then these explanations are then scored with a simulator. So we take our samples from before, And then we feed both the explanation, the candidate explanation, and also these samples into the simulator. What the simulator does is simulate what happens if the feature actually had this explanation. So in this case, if the feature activates on proper nouns, then we would expect New York City, Tokyo, France, and Paris to be active. Unfortunately, this doesn't actually match our real activation pattern, so we can go ahead and eliminate this explanation. We can repeat this process. So suppose our next candidate is activates on country capitals. We see that this causes Tokyo and Paris to light up, but not New York City. This means that once again, we can eliminate this explanation. And then our final explanation activates on city names. This causes New York City, Tokyo, and Paris to be active, which is in line with what we see with the real feature activations. So we know that this feature represents city names.
Can we interfere
Yeah, go
with a
ahead, go
question?
ahead.
How did you calculate the features?
So these I'll go into more detail later, but in training we used SAE features, and we had a existing SAE feature dictionary. Yeah.
Sorry, can you explain the LM simulator, whether the outputs and inputs, like I just don't quite understand what this is. Where
Oh,
do you get your candidate prompts and things like that?
yeah, good
Like,
question.
is it an LM?
Yes, yeah, it is now. I'm sorry, I went pretty quickly over that. But yeah, so the explanation generator is a large language model that is given like these samples with New York City highlighted and Paris highlighted. Like,
I
yeah.
get that part.
All
And
right.
are those high activating samples? Is that where they come from? New York City, Tokyo, and Paris. Are
Oh.
those yeah, I'm sorry, just for input. Is that are those high activating samples? So you have some feature
Yeah.
and you just like mine text to find things that activate that feature strongly,
Right.
and
Yes.
that's what those are. That's your input.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what was it? So I understand the explanation generator. I'm wondering about the simulator. Oh, the simulator. Yeah.
Yeah. So the simulator takes these unhighlighted samples, and the candidate explanation, and then it says that like it outputs, let's go visit, some special symbol around New York City to indicate that that should be active. And then after it does that, we kind of compare whether or not it's consistent.
Is this the same protocol that Burns was suggesting? And then, and when they make explanations and they validate the explanation, is that right? They're like, oh, like how accurate is the explanation? And
Yeah, it's basically you basically try to, according to the explanation, you try to simulate the behavior. You
yeah.
notice the agreement between the actual behavior and the simulated behavior. Yeah, that's a good
Yeah.
explanation.
Yeah. As in you're predicting the activation value?
You're just predicting the most activated token.
Actually, that's a good question. So I didn't train the simulator myself.
Oh, you use a train? You train
Yeah,
simulator? It's not an off-the-shelf. it's so Dami Choi in a previous work, she trained a simulator to do this and found it was better than like zero shot asking a language model to score. Actually, it might be scores. Actually, you might be right. It might be outputting scores per token. And then we can I think they're take basically it's taking the correlation between the scores on these tokens and the scores on these tokens. Yeah. Yes.
The generator to my dictionary of the same feature descriptions. So what happens if our feature that's basically calculated on everything? Because usually that time for SAE features the description is not as, I guess, accurate. And in that case, the explanation generator, does it then reject all the explanations? Is there a point where it's like of explanations? Or
Yeah.
maybe like poly someone.
Yeah, that's a good question. So in this case, we were just using an off-the-shelf kind of feature and explanation dictionary. Some of them, there's some more details in the paper, but definitely we found some of them were kind of noisy. And actually, our trained model was more accurate sometimes with those noisy explanations. Yeah.
Sorry, this might be a dumb question. Is
Yeah.
all country capitals like city names? So if there are city names, wouldn't they all be active?
So I guess in this case, New York City is not a country capital, right?
Because we're using the original inputs that activated your feature, you are current, like, unless your data, like, original data set is limited to only capitals, you're kind of like guaranteed to have negative examples to the explanation of country capitals.
Cool.
Question from Chris.
Yes.
Chris, do you want to unmute and say your question?
Oh, it's not a question. It's a delayed comment about the simulator. It just reminded me of this reward function that Transluce used when training a neuron explainer.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's exactly that procedure. Yeah. Okay, yeah, also feel free to interrupt with questions because I did budget that in the time for this.
I have a philosophical question.
Yes.
So it seems like you're using like automated tools to generate your training data for
Yes,
explanation.
exactly, yeah.
Doesn't it mean that your like explanation will be bounded by the ability of existing tools?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think our current setup, yes, for sure. I do hope that at some point, and there's going to be discussion about this later, but I do hope at some point there is, if we're leveraging models that already have like reasoning capability and language capability, maybe it's able to kind of like compose certain introspective skills or something. But again, this is like going to be future work, and I'm, pretty excited about,
Sounds great, yeah.
yeah. About whether this will happen or not. Okay, cool. So yeah, basically this is this is basically automated feature descriptions. You can read more in that like DOMI report that Chris shared, or Bills et al. But yeah, this is kind of how we generate supervision for this first question. And then the second question about what internal components were used to make a particular decision. Basically, we can do this through activation patching. So this is like a pretty common way people identify causally relevant components. You start with one input, for example, Paris is the capital of. You get an output from the LM. You can then construct a counterfactual input, like Rome is the capital of, and you get a different answer. And now we can intervene on the original model and replace each of its activations with activation at the corresponding token and layer of the counterfactual model. And this can tell us, depending on how much, whether the output changes, how much the output changes, whether that activation was important to the model's decision. So in this case, we specifically formulate questions in the form, will your output change if V was inserted at a layer at a token of the input. And the ground truth explanation should be, in this case, output changes from France to Italy. So note that the questions right now are binary, which makes them pretty easy to score. But if we ask these questions for every activation, we recover kind of the full set of causally relevant activations. Okay, so for the second question, we generate supervision with activation patching. And then finally, what parts of the input were important to a decision? So in this domain, we specifically study a setting where prior work has looked at, has used this setting to evaluate faithful chain of thought. So this is a setting with a multiple choice question with a hint. So we have questions that look something like this. So the first US president was A. Washington B. Jefferson. sorry. We have a hint B, and suppose the model says B in this case. Sorry. And then we can run the model through the prompt through the model again, this time removing the hint, and suppose the LM's answer changes. So there's been a lot of like there's been at least one prior work that looked at this and found that models will change their behavior, but they won't verbalize it in their chain of thoughts. And so this has been like a canonical example of models are not faithful in their chain of thought. So our question is, what if we actually tried to train models on this objective, on identifying whether if the hint is removed, does your answer change? So yeah, so for this setting, we generate supervision through ablating parts of the input. Okay, so that was step one. Step two is now we take all of these outputs and we train explainers. We train language models to explain themselves. So let's start with the first question. What do models' internal features represent? Again, these are the questions and answers in this domain. We train the la okay, so the features are taken from target models. And we just kind of embed them as continuous embeddings into the explainer model. And then we train them to produce activates on city names. So in the case where, we're using a different target and explainer model, it could be the case that the feature dimension doesn't actually match with the explainer dimension. So in this case, we kind of just also train a linear projection in order to map from the target hidden dimension to the explainer hidden dimension.
You always embed it in the first, like in layer zero,
Yes.
not in the same way, like the source layer.
Sorry, no. So basically we yeah, we only embed in layer zero. And I think we also, because like we explore a bunch of different layers, and like I guess in practice we also found that like a lot of embeddings don't tend to change a lot across layers, which might be interesting.
But layer zero and layer one are often pretty different. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah,
Yeah.
yeah,
Like the
yeah,
first couple layers
yeah,
change a lot.
yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. It uses so oh you have a subscript L, so it's a different linear projection for the layer. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so for the second question, we do a pretty similar procedure. Once again, the continuous vector is inserted in the embedding layer, and we train the model to produce output changes from France to Italy. And then the final question, once again, we start with the kind of multiple choice question and the hint. We ask if the hint is removed, how does the answer change? And we train the model to say something like the output changes from B to A. Okay, so that was a very quick overview of both of our steps. So now that we have that, we can start trying to answer our three key questions.
So now, wait,
Yeah, go ahead.
so now your explainer model is the same as the model understudy. And so it feels like, oh, there's two ways that fine-tuning could achieve a goal. One is it could explain what the original model was doing,
Right.
or it could change its behavior to, so that it's easier to explain. Like I'm always going to say pineapple to everything, therefore my explainer
Oh,
is the same.
that's a very good point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so okay. In this paper we actually didn't look at like this true definition of introspection where we took the model after it was fine-tuned and like relabeled everything.
I see. So it's just like you use the model itself as like the seed.
Yes.
I see. But it's actually a second model.
Yes. But
I
that's
see.
a very good question, and I there's some future work that yeah addresses that.
Right back.
Should I wait or should
No,
we?
go ahead.
Okay.
I'm gonna get you some water.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, yeah, so our first question, can models be trained to introspect and does introspection generalize? So we can answer this question by looking at models that were trained and comparing them against models that are untrained. And we can see that for each of these explanation types, we do outperform the untrained model. So yes, training enables better introspection in all three domains.
What's the baseline? Like, what is a good baseline here? Like, 40% seems really good for
Yeah,
untrained models.
that's a good point. So this is like basically Selfie, if you're familiar with
Oh,
Selfie.
yeah.
And we made Selfie better by we like Selfie is pretty sensitive to the scale of
Right.
the, so we like tried five different scales and we got the max of all of them. Yeah. Like we got the best performance out of them. Yeah, but it seems like models also natively have some of this ability already, which is pretty cool. Okay, so another thing we wanted to ask is whether this accuracy is like, is it like How general is it? Or is it models simply learning to kind of retrieve things it's learned from the training data? Thank you so much. So in order to assess this, for each test example, we can kind of just retrieve the label associated with the nearest feature, kind of take the top one activating feature. And then we can say that, for example, an arbitrary feature, we can explain it with city names. So compared to this baseline, we also outperform this baseline. So basically, this is indication that the model isn't just memorizing and interpolating between its training data points. It's actually some sort of maybe more general form of introspection that it's learned. And finally, we asked like how far can we push this generalization, right? So we trained the model specifically on feature descriptions because we have a lot of feature descriptions out there, and we can just use them to train. And then once we trained them, we tested them on held out feature descriptions. We tested, sorry, held out SAE features. We tested them on actually full activations for models. And also we had tested differences between activations. So you take two counterfactual inputs, you take the activations at the same positions, and you try to take their difference, and you can see if you can interpret that vector. Okay, so here are the results in each of these three domains. You can see green bar, self-explanations, purple bar, retrieval, baseline, gray bar, untrained. You can see across all the features, the model trained to explain itself performs the best. Although, interestingly, the untrained baseline is pretty good here as well. So you can see that explainers trained to introspect on one type of features kind of non-trivially generalize to other types of features.
What is the untrained baseline? How can it be so good?
Yeah, so that was exact. But yeah, basically it's Selfie.
Oh, I see.
And we also made Selfie, we also boosted Selfie a little bit by doing five scales of vectors, patching in five scales of vectors, and taking the best performing one. Yeah.
How do you have any idea of like what is the difference between the best one and kind of like the average performance of Selfie here?
Oh, that's a really good
Is like the
question.
variation crazy or is it?
Yeah, my sense is it's pretty sensitive to the scale of the vector because like the scale really depends on where you're. So I think it will be vary a lot, but that's a good experiment to run. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
You see any generalization across the three different types of the perception that you fine-tuned?
That's also a good question. We didn't explicitly test for that, but I think that's a very interesting thing for future work. Yeah.
A question. So when you fine-tune the model, do you start with the same feature model? So the model's massive is looking at itself, right?
Yes, yeah.
So say if you did the same fine-tuning task but on a different architecture or just like a different model, like you expect the training to reach like that high of a performance.
Yes, that's the second question. So privilege access.
Well, we have experience.
Oh yes,
Okay.
yeah. yes, so we'll go right into that. Thanks for tr helping me transition. So next we'll look at the privilege access hypothesis. Okay, so here we have across the three tasks, we had trained various explainers to explain the same target model. So the green bar is same architecture, same pre-trained model for explainer and target. The blue bar is, I kind of just took the average in this case, but I'll show detailed breakdowns later of all like other sorts of architectures and initialization schemes. And the gray bar is again the untrained baseline. So we can see that in all cases, the self as explainer model does better than the other as explainer models. And this is kind of confirmation of the privilege access hypothesis. And here's also the
Oh,
break.
remind me of the input ablation experiment, so the one with the hugest gap.
Yes, that's well, okay, there's a little caveat here, which I'll go into later, but that one is you take the hint and you remove it. and you ask, does the model's answer change? Does your answer change?
I see.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to this one. Okay, so here's the breakdown by like all this, we had essay features and then we tried to generalize to all these different features. You can see in this case, like training other models is really bad at generalizing to these other forms of features. And then for activation patching, we tried two different target models. In both cases, we saw privileged access. In input ablations, we saw significant privileged access for the quant target model, but not so much for the llama target model. So, like, what is actually going on here?
Did you try different llama models?
Not in this paper, but that I think that would be a good thing to look at. So,
Wait, so the target model is llama and the source model is, I'm sorry, or the working model. So there's quen and llama. Which one is which one is the one that you're training?
okay, that's a good question. So the green bar is always self as explainer. So
See?
the green bar is quen trained on quen or llama trained on llama, and the blue bar is llama trained on quen or quen trained on llama, basically. Yeah.
So I wonder how you distinguish between this is a good initialization and this is like privileged in the sense that you trained in a way that you would never get back from that.
Yeah, I think that's a good qu question. So I there's gonna be some experiments. Actually, also I'm running short on time, so but there's gonna be some we are doing some follow-up experiments where we do look at the true form of privileged access, and it seems like models are actually, even though we trained it to explain the original model, it's actually better at explaining itself. And so I think that's actually a much stronger proof of privileged access. Yeah, so anyways, I think one of the things we discovered is that some models are kind of just weaker overall. Sorry, I'm gonna try to get through some of the stuff first. Are just weaker overall explainers. So like Llama in this case kind of just doesn't really even learn the task at all. The other thing is, like, if we group it by explainer model, we see that like explaining yourself is easier than explaining others, which means that like there isn't an absolute sense in which one target model is easier to explain than another target model. It's all like relative to which model is doing the explaining. So the way we explain this is that privileged access is probably an important first order effect, but there's like other effects as well, including like explainer capability. Okay, and then our third question, does privileged access enable practical scalability benefits? So here we have a plot of training data on the x-axis and explainer performance on in this feature descriptions domain. And we can see in general that the self-trained model scales the best, followed by this other explainer model, followed by our kind of memorization baselines. And you can see specifically it's about 10 times more data efficient than other explainer models. And about 100 times more data efficient than retrieval models. I'm gonna skip this, but I think in general, this just kind of goes to show that like the privileged access hypothesis does have some practical scalability benefits for us. I think it's like a promising sign for introspective techniques. Okay, so I guess we've established that models can be trained to introspect. This sort of generalizes currently across features, maybe across tasks, we'll see. Models demonstrate privileged access to their internals, and this enables some practical scalability benefits. I'm, excited to take this agenda also forward, and also interested to hear what like this group of people think about this. But basically, here we've articulated kind of how introspection can address some key challenges of modern intern methods. This includes what we just saw with scalability, also sort of some forms of generalization that we showed, like generalization across different feature types. We didn't really go into this in this talk, but I think it's also a lot more usable in that, a user can just pull up their favorite language model that they're asking to do a bunch of different tasks, and then just ask them to justify their own decisions. Despite this, there's still a lot of key open questions in each of these areas. So the first question is, how do we actually scalably generate supervision? So this gets at something that I remember who asked here, but basically every time we train a model to generate, to talk about its self-description, its weights changes a little bit. And so it could potentially be the case that this description is no longer faithful to the model. So this might mean that we have to do some sort of recursive training, right? We have to keep refreshing our labels, do something like online to try to keep models to be faithful. And hopefully eventually this process will converge. But this is pretty expensive. And so like I think a key question is like how do we actually make this supervision step a lot less expensive? And also I think just going back to the initial results. So the M engine that worked with us, Carl, has been doing some follow-up work in the input ablation domain. So this is where like explain what you would do without the hint. And there we find the strong version of privileged access where a model is actually better at explaining its features here, even though we trained it to explain this one. So yeah, I think that could be one solution. Another major question is kind of generalization across tasks, which again has already been asked by someone here. So, one thing is maybe we could try to train on all our tasks together and see if we can generalize to new classes of interrupt tasks. Like what is the circuit that you're using, or can you put this feature into your response? What would happen? Or maybe even questions we don't already have very straightforward interrupt procedures for. Or maybe there's something analogous to like self-supervised pre-training that encourages task general introspection. And kind of one reason I articulated already that I'm optimistic this might work is because models have sort of reasoning and composition skills, and maybe they can kind of use that to combine these introspection atomic skills.
So it seems like in your approach, you basically embed the activations or whatever inside like the model. So I'm wondering if you can think about it as multimodalities in some sense, where you have the question in text and you have the feature or like the activation that you want to analyze as a different modality that the model can get. Then if you have like a multimodal model that can get any type of inputs, then maybe that will lead to some sort of generalizability in terms of like the questions that you can ask.
I think that's a very good point. I think like also the like latent QA line of work has also been kind of thinking in those terms as well. But I agree, like you can think of it as like maybe the features is a modality, maybe like the circuits is a modality. Cool. And then I think the final thing is like, is this actually concretely more usable for users? And what sorts of like user interfaces might need to exist to do so? Like this might include, conducting sort of real-world experiments with experts in medical fields or other high-stakes domains, and seeing whether they can actually like collaborate with these models that are more faithful in order to make more accurate decisions on downstream tasks. So I think maybe I'm gonna end on this slide, which is kind of like, here's all the things that I'm excited about that we could try to build out with self-describing language models. And I'm, pretty excited to hear what people think about this, excited for any collaborations if people are interested. Thank you so much. Cool. Any questions or?
Very cool. So cool.
Yeah, it's
Thank
really
you.
excellent.
Thank you. Yes, Yiwei.
Yeah, sorry. I have a question about the I think in one of your earlier slides you mentioned that the sort of these hypotheses are sampled from the LLMs, and I was wondering, have you ever, like during experiment, have you ever encountered a case where these hypotheses, the possible explanations, are not diverse enough?
So in this case, we're using for supervision, we're using like existing supervised fine-tuning techniques. So we're not actually like reliant on the model to be diverse in its generations. I don't know, is that what you're asking or?
Sorry, could you go back to your earlier slides on the I think it's something different.
Do you remember which domain this was about?
I think it's the first one, I think.
This one?
Yes.
Okay.
And yeah, that, and then I remember you listed like there's like a Grundfos explanation of the target, but I
Yeah.
remember you had something like activates on capital cities, activates on
Oh,
like
I see. I
proper
see.
nouns,
Oh,
etc.
I see. Yeah.
So I was wondering, and you said that these are simple from the explanation generator, and the explanation generator are like LMs. And I was wondering, have you ever encountered a case where like the explanations generated are not diverse enough?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, basically, this step was kind of, we didn't do this step because we used existing kind of SAE dictionaries. I will say that one thing we tried before that didn't really work so well was we used some of Dami had some explanations of neurons, and we weren't able to get as good of a generalization from that. And I think one thing I suspect is maybe there's some like diversity issue there in that the SAE features were just a lot more diverse.
I see. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
So the later slides when we're showing question two about low chances mentioned about how models that are like basically have their own explainers, most likely do have their the privileged access. Does this also go beyond in terms of like models, let's say fine-tune the top line at a chance?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think in the paper we had some like results where we were pre-training. If you remember the linear projection in feature descriptions, there was in the paper we had some experiments we actually tried to pre-train that to like be more aligned so that like the features in the target model were actually more aligned with the features with the explainer model, and that actually helped the model explain. Do these meta descriptions of their features. So I do think there is some effect of like if we fine-tune models to behave like the original model, it's going to be better explaining. Yeah.
Mentioned about how few bits see there's a change or not. What are the ends are like? Is it essentially just the actual answer, or is are some of them like truly?
Yeah, that's a good question. So they're just randomly generated. So they're like 75% of the chance is incorrect. But yeah, we just want to see if the model will like we generate it so that 50% of the time it follows the hint, regardless of whether it's correct or not. Yeah.
So you spent a lot of time talking about the consistency part, which seems the most important. But I guess I was wondering if you could maybe wildly speculate about the causality part. Like, do you have
Okay.
thoughts on how to enforce that, or if that's like,
Yeah, that's a good question. So, basically, actually, in some of this like early work here, they actually do act explicitly investigate causality. And I think what they find is that like if you train models to be introspective, you can actually fine-tune them a little bit, and that behavior persists. And I think that's maybe also related to what we see with like college results right now with like if we train the model to introspect, it actually is more faithful to its own behavior than the like original model's behavior. So right now maybe just doing this sort of enforcement is enough for it to persist under causality. But maybe, yeah, I guess we'll have to see what the limits of that are. Yeah.
how does introspective training affect the model's ability to do other things?
Yeah, good question. Currently, we don't care about the model's
Have you measured
ability.
that? Have you measured?
Currently, we don't care. And I think it
Have you
destroys
measured?
it.
Even if you don't care.
It only answers things in terms of feature descriptions right now. But I think multitask training is definitely the future. Yeah.
I think there is another like meta question here, which is, can you now interpret like difference between the original model and the explainer model and try to understand what makes the explainer better? Like what mechanism is now available in the
Yes.
explainer?
Yeah. I think that is super interesting.
I'm also curious if you don't have results for like other tasks, you might not have results for this, but I'm curious if the explainer models perform better on the tasks that they're being asked to do, like the tasks that they're being asked to explain.
That's a good question. Yeah, that's a good question.
So, did you, I guess you filter out when you did the training, you filter out activations for inputs that the model could accurately solve, right? Like that's what we do. Like we filter out inaccurate answers. Like the behavioral performance are very high to begin with for collecting these like activations.
Sorry, what do you mean by it's inaccurate?
So like I guess that when you took, for example, like the Roman like Paris example, you only took inputs where the model can predict the correct answer.
For the activation patching?
For example, for any of these,
I
where you
see.
collect data.
Yeah, I guess we took examples where like the model there was like a definite change in the model's answer. So like we did have to filter a little bit because sometimes the model is like 50, pretty 50-50. And so like when you patch in the thing, it like it's probably not that much of a significant effect. So we had some filter that was like by probability on the output token.
Now, one of the promises of interpretability you mentioned at the beginning is it's sort of this chance to be this lie detector, right? The model is not telling you what it's really thinking, so you've got this separate, totally independent auditing method you can use to check what's the model really doing. Now, we're training models to be very self-aware. They're very good at understanding their own neural representations. Do you philosophically, do you feel like that leads to a situation where now you've built perfect liars?
Yeah. That's not a I think that's not a ridiculous question, and like I think like certain alignment people
Are worried about
are worried
themselves?
about this, yeah. But I think it's at least the way I think about it is like I'm actually not quite I guess I feel like I think lying requires some sort of like intentionality that currently we don't have in language models. Like I guess if we
Is
my
Arnab online?
oh
He's
okay
not.
yeah like my thought is like if language models, if we train them to be consistent, they actually like most of the things we see in terms of emergent and some misalignment is not like some sort of intentional lying, but more some like, oh, we kind of missed this case, or like accidentally something happened which we didn't intend. And so like if we can do this sort of consistency and we can try to like kind of squash out some of these edge cases. So I think a lot of what we see as like misalignment or lying is actually just failures of our training objectives, basically. Yeah. But that's my view at least. Yeah.
I guess I just thought about like if you have like there's an explainer model that's being trained just like for L1 that the questions for memorizability, and if Like over here, we see that the model is really good about being self-aware. What aspect of that do you think he has got to do with dehumanizing, like certain like mechanisms and
So I think to truly get at, well, we have some baselines, of course. I think also truly getting at this question will also require some of the interp experiments to see if like it's using some of the same underlying mechanisms for its behavior and it's also its explanation. But I think the fact that we are able to do better than this memorization baseline is a good sign, at least. Wherever that went. Yes.
Have you published or are you planning on publishing the weights for the plane models?
Oh, they should be online already. Yeah.
In whatever GitHub is linked in the paper.
Yes, yeah. It's
Oh,
there's
and which models do you explain?
there's Llama base, there's Qwen, and there's Llama instruct.
Nice. For
Yeah.
AP, at the AP
At
scale.
the ABO scale, yeah.
Right. You put it on the end it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be great.
When last question, so
That's a good one.
when you evaluated these, did you ever get explanations that were not faithful to the ground truth explanation, but still kind of like consistent or like surprisingly good? Like, did you ever get any surprises here?
I think the biggest surprise is some of the college results right now, in that like sometimes it's not faithful to the original answer, but it's faithful to the like new weights of the model.
Oh.
I guess other time there was this other also this thing in the appendix of the paper where we were like, what are the miss you know what is the 25% that's missing here? Actually, we found a large chunk of them was the original explanations were kind of wrong from the auto interp procedure.
Nice. Oh, there's a question online. Oh, that's you
Yeah,
waiting.
sorry, I have another question. I think you mentioned that you experimented with both the base and the instruct version of Llama 3. I was wondering, have you noticed any, I guess, difference in that regard, in the sense that whether like base model is a better self-explainer compared to the instruct version or vice versa, or like there's virtually no difference in that regard?
Yeah, so actually the base and instruct models are like kind of similar target models. Like their features are basically the same. And a lot of
But as an explainer, how about that?
yeah, I'd have to look at the results in the paper, but I think there was like pretty little difference between the two.
I see. Actually, I have another question regarding the, because I found the, I think you called it the input ablation, where you test the input with and without a hint for the multiple choice question. Because I think there's some studies, I guess, for the earlier language models on like how they have sort of positional bias for the choices. And I was wondering, have you experimented with like instead of sort of an explicit hint, but something like more implicit in terms of like how you the order you arranged the choices?
Yeah, we didn't try it here, but I think that's a very good idea to try. To try to verbalize that. Yeah.
Thank you. Very cool.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much, Belinda. It's
Yeah.
amazing work.
Thank
Really, really
you.
great. And thanks for coming to talk to us today about
Yeah.
that. Are you free to stick around a little bit this afternoon and chat
Yeah,
with people?
totally.